And now, from the Green 960 studios in San Francisco, this is an organic conversation with Helga Hellberg and Mark Mulcahy.
And welcome to this week's edition of An Organic Conversation, a show about food, relationships, and life itself. We're your hosts, Helga Hellberg.
And Mark Mulcahy.
Thank you for all the questions and comments that we've received, really from all over. Amy is writing us, Dear Helga and Mark, thank you so much for your wonderful show. I have been subscribing to An Organic Conversation on iTunes and have been listening for the past few months and have learned so much. I was wondering if you had access to any sort of job or internship pool in this field. As a recent college graduate, I'm trying desperately to get involved with the organic sustainable movement, but I'm oftentimes coming up shorthanded. There's a lot of work to be done, so true, but hardly any wages to be earned. How can a motivated young female with a limited background in farming make this movement a career? Many thanks, Amy. Thank you, Amy. Well, there are lots of resources. Mark, what do you recommend?
Well, one of the things that, as long as I've been in the industry, one of the things that I've always recommended to young people, someone who fits Amy's description exactly. Now, you're not going to make a lot of money initially, so get ready for that.
Later.
Yeah, well, what's that old farmer's adage? An old farmer's adage, if you want to make $1 million farming, then start with $2 million, right? Or something like that. But you can go to Worldwide Opportunities on Organic Farms. Other people know it as WOOF, W-W-O-O-F, and that is W-W-O-O-F, international.org.
Yeah, great. It's also... I heard it's also interpreted as willing workers on organic farms. My dog still doesn't understand why there are two W's in WOOF, but it's two W's, O-O-F, international.org, willing workers on organic farms. Or what was your interpretation of WOOF?
Well, the Worldwide Opportunities on Organic Farms.
Same organization, though.
Same organization. And if you want to just go to here in the United States and you don't want to travel abroad, you can go to WOOF USA. If you Google WOOF USA, then you would get there too. And you'll either get a dog or you'll get farming opportunities.
One of the two. There's also Work, Live, Learn. It's www.growfood.org, an organization exactly for that, to connect you to farms where you can do and be an apprenticeship, do an apprenticeship. And there's also Local Harvest. That's localharvest.org to find a farm nearby, and you can just inquire about opportunities there of paid apprenticeships.
And one last thing, if you really are interested, and these don't really suit your fancy, the Ecological Farming Conference is every January, and they have probably 10 or 20 postings there because it's a farming conference, and so farmers are always looking for people to help them. And I know any of these farming, look at some of the farming conferences because they will have postings as well.
Yeah, that's eco-farm.org. Indeed, EcoFarm every January in Asilomar down in Monterey, the largest gathering here on the West Coast of the sustainable farming movement. Lots of opportunity there, both to find in the field as well as in some kind of support capacity, working for nonprofits, etc. Second to last, there's we said Local Harvest. There's also a governmental site. It's ATRA, A-T-T-R-A, .ncat.org. Sustainable Farming Apprenticeship and Internships Directory for on-the-job learning opportunities in sustainable and organic agriculture. And of course, Local Dirt, localdirt.com, soon to be the most expansive database of local food and local farms here in the U.S., localdirt.com. That's a lot of resources. And we had a show a couple months ago where we talked about apprenticeship opportunities here in California. Mm-hmm. Not being legal. So make sure you check in, you, Amy, and everyone else interested in working at a farm this summer, to check your local statewide labor laws. Because here in California, if you provide any kind of work of economic value to a farm, you are falling under labor law requirements. So the summer apprenticeship program for a couple months, just working at a farm and learning where your food comes from unpaid, here in California at least, does not work with statewide legislation, unfortunately. But every state handles this differently. So absolutely make sure to not get your farm in trouble or get yourself in trouble, but more so your farm, your employer, even for an unpaid apprenticeship, check the state legislation and requirements around that.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Thank you again, Amy. If you have a comment or question for us, please email us at share@anorganicconversation.com. Mark, did you ever work at a farm?
First question, did you ever work? I've avoided it this long.
Yeah. Couple more years. And
I don't think you get retirement for not working. I have worked on farms, but never as an employee. I mean, I've gone to farms and done farm work. And as a matter of fact, I can tell you—
Not in California, because that would be illegal.
Well, this was a long time ago.
In many other states where it is legal.
As a matter of fact, a good friend of mine, Rick Knoll, who owns the old Knoll, he and Christy own Knoll Farms out in Brentwood, asked me to pick rosemary one day with the rest of his workers because someone called in sick. And I said, sure, I'll go out there. And so I watched what they did. And I said, this is a breeze. I'm going to go out there and I'm going to just knock, you know, go with. He came out about an hour later. He said, would you quit picking? Said, you're costing
you're
me money.
See, that's
you're
why.
Costing me money.
There was no
said,
economic value
leave
in what you did.
To them, and you're costing me money. It's just.
Yeah.
So no, that wasn't my forte. And so I moved on to things like organic produce consulting and talking, you know, and working with retailers and that type of thing. And radio.
Yeah.
And eating.
Yes. Oops.
And how about you?
Well, I was much younger, as a young boy, actually, I spent an entire summer at a farm in Germany, and it was kind of a mixed operation. Now I would know how to describe it. They had literally everything. There were geese playing with pigs. And then the sow had, an entire, I'm not sure if it's called a litter. Would anyone know? Yeah. A litter of little piglets.
We'll find out if it's
wrong. But she had three too many. She couldn't nurse all. I think she had a ridiculous number of like 16 or 18 piglets. And a couple died, and three had to be nursed by a bottle. And so there was, you know, I, 10 years old, 9 years old, literally nursing every 4 or 5 hours, even through the night, those little piglets with a bottle. And after only, you know, a handful of days, they would know me so well that I just needed to open the door and like do a little whistle or something, and they would run after me squeaking. I was their new mom.
Yeah.
And that was, yeah, that's a very, very fond memory I still have. They all made it. I mean, not anymore, but at one point they didn't. But we were able to raise them. The three little runts.
That's awesome.
I'll never forget.
That's awesome.
Happy pigs are a happy sight. Great. Well, you're listening to An Organic Conversation here on Green 960. I'm Helge Hellberg.
Oh, I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And we're excited about our guests today. Three of them who know all about stone fruit, particularly peaches, because it's peach season.
Dun, da, da.
More on that when we come back right after the break.
Moving to the country, I'm gonna eat a lot of peaches. I'm moving to the country, I'm gonna eat me a lot of peaches. I'm moving to the country, I'm gonna eat a lot of peaches. I'm moving to the country, I'm gonna eat a lot of peaches.
And we are back here to An Organic Conversation as part of the Green Morning, an entire morning dedicated to your health, holistic nutrition, eco-travel, and food advocacy. The Green Morning every Saturday from 9 to 12:30 here on Green 960. For more information, visit thegreenmorning.com. I'm Helge Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And today we are talking about fuzzy stone fruit, peaches. With us in the studio is Earl Herrick, owner and founder of Earl's Organic Produce, a San Francisco Bay Area produce distributor focused entirely on organic produce and a fine supporter and underwriter of this show. Earl, so good to have you back.
Good morning, guys.
It's great. And man, you smell good today. What is that?
What is that cologne you're wearing?
That's got to be stone fruit.
Wow. This is incredible.
Gotta eat a lot of peaches.
How's the season for stone fruit?
It's a little different than what you might call normal, and that has everything to do with the weather. We're about 8 to 10 days behind normal harvest dates, and those dates are very they have a long history to them. And when you're growing peaches, you know exactly within a couple of days when they're normally coming off the different varieties.
Oh, really?
And we're a week to 10 days behind. That being said, it's a great season. I think there's some benefit to that.
And why we had a too wet of a spring, or when did we fall behind?
Yeah, do y'all remember a couple months ago how we had these weird rains? It rained like once a week every day in June.
Well, and Memorial Day week, that whole week was wet and cold. And
yeah. Oh, right, you were camping.
I was camping. It snowed where I was camping.
That was a smart move.
There you go. Thanks, Mark. Well, you know, it's really true. It slows everything down. It creates a situation where everything slows down, and it just takes that much longer to ripen. Now, sometimes in other years that I've been involved, it catches up with itself. There'll be a heat wave that comes on, and all of a sudden you now are picking two varieties at the same time. This hasn't happened. We've had mild weather. If you look at Fresno, which is kind of the peach capital of California, those temperatures have not crested 100 yet, and mm-hmm. that's very unusual. Generally, they have at least a dozen days of 100 by now.
Yeah.
So that's just a continuation of that mild. I know 95 to 100 doesn't seem too mild, but for the valley, that's considered
and
mild.
And peaches love 110, right?
Oh, 100,
120.
110 is about it. Any further?
That's cobbler.
Yeah. After that, you get into cobbler.
Exactly. No, there is a danger at a certain point. It's about 108 to 110 for a couple days. The sugars go back into the tree, and it actually kind of works opposite again.
Oh, why? Why do the sugars go back to the tree?
It's something that has to do with the tree protecting itself, uh-huh. I'm pretty sure.
The sugar would literally cook, right? At one point, I mean, it does start to react.
Precisely.
Well, wow. Maybe even like a maple tree in the winter where it takes it out of the leaves and then draws back in, and then that's when they do the sapping, you know.
Yeah.
So it could be a similar thing.
Mm-hmm. So stone fruit, we did have, from my perspective as an eater, we did have an exceptional cherry season, though. Mm-hmm. I mean, the cherries this year were unbelievable.
Yeah, they had
out of this world.
Much more, a richer flavor this year.
And like crisp, right? They had mm-hmm. they were firm and so sweet.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
yeah, I think we're walking that balance the whole spring and summer up to now with we had too much rain. Almost it wasn't hot enough. So what that did, it allowed mm-hmm. fruit to stay in the tree longer to get that mm-hmm. real robust flavor. I mean, the peaches and nectarines right now have really great big flavor. And same
this
thing
is their time. This is the peach and nectarine
time.
Oh,
this is it.
This is it. Yeah.
July and August, you're going to get the best peaches in California right now.
So we're talking with Earl Herrick, the founder and owner of Earl's Organic Produce, San Francisco-based Bay Area retailer, even though you do sell far beyond the Bay Area, right?
Oh, absolutely. We go all the way up to the border of Oregon, over to Sacramento, down to Monterey. And then specific items, heirloom tomatoes, which their season's just starting, will fly in freight all the way across country.
And then, so you recognized in, 1988 already the potential, and your heart was always in organic. Why always organic?
You know, I started looking in the back of candy bar wrappers as a kid, and I saw that Reese Cup was the best one. They didn't have anything added. And, I don't know why that is. You know, how come that is? Don't know. But it was from that certain awareness with food and just carried over. That's about it.
So you never questioned to include non-organic varieties?
It just didn't make any sense to me. Why would you want to have poison put on your food or on the land where it's growing, and then you want to consume that? It just didn't make any sense. I mean, I understand arguments to and fro, but for me, it just didn't resonate.
And You have a beautiful website where people can find all the stuff. That this is it, right? This is the season. This is
it really is. And when we talk about stone fruit, I just want to mention quickly, there's you're talking apricots, plums, nectarines, peaches, and cherries. And there's literally hundreds of varieties of all those different items. We're going to focus on peaches, and that's my love. This is my favorite time of year for two reasons. It's stone fruit, and it's the heart of the baseball season. So...
And an organic conversation is on.
That's right.
So there's three reasons. That's right. There was three reasons.
Just like baseball.
But really, as a produce person, I mean, you have year-round business, but what's coming in right now is the cream of the crop, right? I mean, really, the way the studio smells right now is incredible, right?
Mm-hmm. You know, this reminds me of the early days when I went down the San Francisco produce market and walked down the dock back in 1980. And it was the heart of July, August, and it was right around midnight. And product was coming right in from the valley, San Joaquin, Brentwood, and it was melon season, and they weren't even refrigerating them. They were picking them and shipping them. And I'd walk down, and the bouquet, the fragrance was just filled this open-air dock. I mean, it didn't even matter there was an open air. It was just magnificent. And that stuck with me all this time, and that is what this time of year is about.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I remember those exact same things. You'd get out of the truck, bleary eyed, and go, "Oh my goodness!"
Yeah, just boom.
I've come back home.
Yeah. Wakes you up.
So, Earl, I think that when most people, I think one of the biggest things that consumers, our listeners, would ask us if they were calling in right now, they would be saying, "Okay, what is the difference in peaches? You know, how do I pick them out? How do I ripen them?" I mean, because that's, I think, the most frustrating thing for most consumers is you go to a store and you see people smelling peaches and knocking on them and, you know, kind of pinching them to see, okay, can I get this home and will it be good? And then often they're disappointed.
Mm.
And
absolutely.
So maybe you could shed some light on what's going on with, peaches, like right now, how to pick them out and maybe any little nuances around that. And then also how to ripen them. Before we get into some more of this, because I think if anything we leave the show with all the great stuff we're going to talk about today, that would really help our listeners.
Yes, and you know, you're totally right, Mark. I think peaches is one of those items where it's more often than not that you get something that is not quite fully satisfactory. It's for me, it's almost impossible to pick the perfect peach. I hope I learned today, but you can smell them and they have a nice flavor to a nice scent to them, but they get, sometimes you pick one that's a little bit strawy or doesn't have the sweetness. Or
mealy.
Yeah, exactly. Mealy is the worst,
my
right?
Goodness. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Mealy. Talk about the disappointment. One of the major disappointments in life is a mealy peach.
Really? Yeah.
I'm serious.
No doubt about it. No doubt about it. Shall I get right into it?
Yeah, go.
Peaches, so much has to do with our own taste buds, but you're going to have anything from a tart to a tart sweet to overall just honey flavors. And as the season starts early, which is in May, you're going to have a tart or peach just because they haven't had the heat units that you're going to get in June, July, and August. So your early peaches are going to be a cling variety, which means that the fruit virtually clings to the pit. So you're going to eat it off of that and it's going to get all stringy around the pit. But that peach you're going to eat then is tart sweet, and you should be able to get a good flavor from that. That's in May. Mm-hmm. When you get into June, you get a little more moisture content. That's when you start seeing a little bit of dribbling off of your chin. Mm-hmm. And then when you
especially
get
into, when we eat.
When you get into late July, we start to get into what we refer to as a stone-free peach. That is when you can cut the peach in half and pull it away from the stone.
And so what would you recommend to people who are picking peaches different from early June to now? What would be the difference of when you're picking and eating that peach?
Yeah, at this time in early August, you want to get one that's got strong background color as a visual. In other words, you want a nice orange, if it's going to be an orange, a yellow peach. And as you pick it up, it should feel heavy for its size and weight. Now, that takes a little practice, but go around but don't squeeze them. Hold them in the palm of your hand, but don't squeeze them with your fingers and keep your fingers together because you don't want to bruise them.
So like gentle pressure, like with an avocado, or you just want to just make sure that you're just getting a gentle give?
Exactly. Mm-hmm. As it ripens, you get a darker flavor. And if you're in a store or a farmer's market, ask for a sample. Anytime you want to buy something, ask for a sample and get that relationship going with your produce person. And that flavor should be there on something that's got a little give, good color. If you can smell it, all the better, but that always doesn't always work. Some varieties just have a better bouquet than others.
You're listening to an organic conversation here on Green 960, all part of the Green Morning, an entire morning dedicated to your health. Every Saturday from 9 to 12:30 here on Green 960. For more information, visit thegreenmorning.com. I'm Helge Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And with us in the studio today is Earl Herrick, owner and founder of Earl's Organic Produce. And that's earlsorganic.com. And we'll take a quick break and we'll be right back and on how to pick the perfect peach.
Some people call me the space cowboy. Yeah. Some call me the gangster of love.
An Organic Conversation is brought to you by Spotica Skincare. Founded by Janet Lee Katzen, Spotica is a holistic approach to skincare that is 100% pure and natural, free of synthetic chemicals, and includes organic and wildcrafted ingredients. For more information about Spotica skincare products and the Spotica Spa, visit spotica.com. That's SPHATIKA.com.
Produce is ever-changing, seasons coming and going. At Earl's Organic, we have been sourcing solely organic produce for over 20 years. Since 1988, Earl's Organic Produce has been establishing strong relationships with growers and developing a deep understanding of the seasons, so you can offer the most delicious organic produce to your customers, staff, and clients year-round. For organic produce, visit Earl's Organic Produce at earlsorganic.com. That's earlsorganic.com.
For the ultimate West Marin experience, visit Toby's Feed Barn in Point Reyes Station, home of the Point Reyes Farmers Market every Saturday. Toby's Feed Barn features organic produce, native plants, gifts, books, an organic coffee bar, an art gallery, concerts, even daily yoga classes. Toby's Feed Barn in downtown Point Reyes Station, open 7 days a week, family owned and operated since 1942, a West Marin original. For more information, visit tobysfeedbarn.com.
Fry Vineyards is America's first organic winery, family-owned and operated since 1980. Dedicated to the highest levels of organic and biodynamic farming, Fry never adds synthetic sulfites or other preservatives to their wines. Fry organic and biodynamic wines include delicious Cabernet Sauvignon, Zinfandel, Syrah, Chardonnay, and Sauvignon Blanc. Fry Vineyards Mendocino County award-winning wines, without added sulfites. Available at grocery stores and online at frywine.com. That's FREYWINE.com.
Marin Organic, an association of organic food producers in Marin County, California, is helping to create a healthy and sustainable food shed just north of the Golden Gate Bridge. A model for how to feed a region in a way that is economically viable, environmentally sound, socially just, and culturally appropriate. The opportunity to change the world is right on our plates. Be a part of the solution. For more information on Marin Organic and how to support its efforts, visit marinorganic.org.
And we're back here to an organic conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And today we are talking about fuzzy stone fruit, peaches. With us in the studio is Earl Herrick, owner and founder of Earl's Organic Produce, a San Francisco Bay Area produce distributor focused solely on organic produce, and of course, an underwriter of this show. Earl, we were talking before the break about how to pick the perfect peach. You said that under pressure, it needs to be able to give a little bit. It needs to be kind of heavy for its size, so we know the moisture is fine, the juiciness. But ultimately, I've done that, and I still picked a peach that wasn't good. What's the is there like the golden rule?
I'll say some more.
It's tricky, huh?
They shouldn't feel like rocks, so they should have that give. If it's rock hard, don't buy it, or understand that it's going to take a couple days. When you get it home, do not refrigerate them. Keep them in a cool place if you want them, if you want to sustain them for a couple days. But you want to eat them as soon as possible. Lay them out on your counter, put them in a bowl, put them in a colander, and let them ripen. And just check them out every day, and then try one. and say, okay, that's a little too firm, not quite there, I'll wait. And that way you get developing your own sense of it. Now, as the season goes on and where we are now in August, you want to eat them when they're a little less ripe. Now that, because this time of year, they're
firmer.
Firmer.
Yes.
Thank you. Because this time of year, the peach has been on a tree a long time. They're densely fruited and they're less moisture. They're less juicy. Now, if you let them ripen to the point that you're used to, they will actually taste mealy on occasion. So you want to eat them more like an apple. So cut them, and they could be a little crunchy, but you'll get this wonderful, robust, full flavor. It may not be as juicy, but it'll be there.
And another quick thing, two things just to chime in on that before mm-hmm. we move on, is I recommend that you look at the stores and where they sell their peaches, and I would recommend shopping for your peaches at a store that sells their peaches unrefrigerated because they're allowing to ripen. And so you'll actually get something that's been allowed to be at room temperature and will actually get some of that aroma and will actually ripen at a temperature that it should be ripening at.
Yeah.
And number two, if you get them home and they're hard, you can put them in a bag mm-hmm. with any other stone fruit and close up the paper bag, and that should ripen them quicker because they're producing ethylene gas.
Yep.
And that's recommended by most stone fruit growers will recommend that you put them in a bag and then check them out every day. And then if there's a little bit more give, then you know that you can start eating them. But if you got them firm, really, really firm, then you could put them in a bag mm-hmm. and it'll ripen them quicker.
And keep them away from bananas, right? Always.
Well, that would ripen them much
even
faster.
Quicker. Yeah, exactly. They'll ripen them really fast. Then.
Apples and bananas are a couple of the higher ethylene gas producers.
You know, the fact is to get that wonderful result from a fruit, whatever it might be, you got to work at it a little bit. You have to, you know, test them out yourself. Try one a little too firm, wait another day. And that way, then you establish your own relationship with it. But talk to your produce person, get a relationship going, get samples, see what you can learn from them. You know, they're the professionals.
And sample, always
yes.
in your produce department.
I bring my own knife with
me. That's what it's for. Yeah, that's a different story.
Yeah.
And now with us on the phone, you're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
We have the person that knows all about peaches, Richard Burkhardt, who runs 30 varieties on 65 acres in Danuba, California, the peach capital of the world. Richard, thanks for joining us today.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be here.
So beginning of August now, how has the season, we talked a little bit about the season and the beginning of the show that we were just on the cusp of too much water and not enough heat. And how's the crop coming in now for you? How's this year in stone fruit in general? You grow 30 different varieties. And particularly for peaches, this is a good year?
It's not a bad year at all. I would say this year would, rank in the middle of the pack. With extra heat, you have some good things happen and some bad. I mean, it's a, it's Mother Nature and us that do that. we're at somewhat of the mercy of the weather, but unless you have a really terrible year, a grower can grow a good piece of fruit no matter what, if he works at it. Mm-hmm.
So what do you grow? You have 30 varieties of stone fruit, several varieties of peaches. What do you grow on your farm?
Well, as it is, we have 19 varieties of peaches, both that includes traditional yellow flesh and summer white varieties. And then the rest are mostly all nectarine, white, and yellow flesh varieties also.
Hey, Richard, this is Earl. How you doing?
Real good, Earl.
Now, this has been a little cooler year, right? You guys really haven't had those three-digit temperatures yet, have you?
No, we haven't had very many at all. We have not had a sustained over 100 degree week like is normal. But that's not necessarily necessary at this point of the season. Mid-90s to close to 100, the long days that we have this time of the year, we're sitting pretty good right now.
Mm-hmm.
The earlier varieties, yes, there was some difficulty getting the sugar levels up, but that's all really over now.
Yeah, I think so. The ones I've been eating, they certainly represent that.
So, so Richard, this is Mark Mulcahy, and welcome.
Thank you.
Richard, we're talking about 19 varieties, okay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So people go into the store. I've been noticing, being in the produce industry along with Earl, for 30-something years, and I'm noticing that varieties come and go. And is there a difference between the older varieties and the newer varieties, and how often do they change in a season?
Well, they can change early in the season. We can go through and have a variety ready to pick, like in May. And we might pick it. 2 days later, we pick the rest. The variety can be gone, theoretically, in 4 days.
So you may not be able to go back to your store. You may have a peach 1 week and literally go back and grab a yellow peach and have it be a completely different variety.
Yes, especially early in the season from May to, oh, the first week of June.
Mm-hmm.
And then you start having where we need to pick more often. There's a wider gap. We generally pick 3 to 4 times a lot of varieties that come after the middle of June. And all the way, and really it doesn't go, we never do really more than 4 times. It has a lot to do with Mother Nature and what happened earlier during the very early part of the season, then the temperatures then, and how bloom went and all that. It really doesn't have a lot to do with that's how many times you would normally pick, because there's a point to where it gets cost prohibitive.
Well, and so I'm wondering, when I was growing up, my favorite, and they still are my favorite peaches, Suncrest, O. Henry, Red Top, and then came Lady Peaches, and now there's Princess Peaches, and now...
Donut.
There's a donut peach, correct. But where does this, I mean, I was fine with those three peaches for a long time, but I imagine, where do all these varieties come from, and what makes a grower decide what to grow for what he's going to deliver to the market?
Well, it has a lot to do with what market actually he's going for. The large corporate and large growers, and they're not necessarily corporate. A lot of them are family farms that, of course, have many, many, many employees and marketing and sales and all that. They're looking at the large chain stores and the trends toward varieties that the buyers seem to want for a variety of reasons, and most of that is lack of shrink, good color, and the right sizes, and how many boxes per acre the fruit can put out, a lot of factors as far as in the orchard, how many split pits is it going to get on this freestone, how many doubles, does it set consistently every year, does it seem to have a problem with certain type of pests that seem to come a lot, like mites and, aphids. There's mm-hmm. quite a few, but a lot of the bigger ones, and the timing of the year. There's certain times that you need to have a lot of produce out there, right before Memorial Day, right before the 4th of July. These things are a large factor in the produce business and in the stone fruit business, because once you pick it, the fuse is lit. You only have a certain amount of time to move this fruit to wherever it's going to go, and it could go to 5 miles or it could go to 3,000 miles.
And so quantity,
that's a big factor.
Quantity, the way it stores, the way it ships, of course, the larger the operation, the more product you have. So that makes those attributes more important.
Yes, it does. It makes it more important. And the grower is sometimes in these situations, if it's not the... if the farm isn't owned by the large entity that's packing and marketing it, they're basically telling the grower, like, we need fruit at this time. These are the varieties that are available during this time. You can plant. We seem to think that these two do better. We get a better price. Things like that. It's totally has nothing to do with, unfortunately, with flavor or eating quality.
You're listening to an organic conversation here on Green 960. Today it's all about peaches. I'm Helge Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And with us on the phone is Richard Burkhardt, who grows 30 different varieties of stone fruit. 19 of those are peaches, including the old-time favorite O. Henry yellow peaches on 65 acres in the peach capital of Danuba, California. Richard, knowing your history a little bit, you're not part of a five-generation farming family. Actually, your parents kind of fled the LA area to kind of go back to the land and enjoy an organic orchard, which you then continued. Why are you organic? What's your philosophy to grow organic?
I grew up with a strong love of farming, because I guess it's in my nature. There's a lot of sons of farmers around that don't get that, and they don't go into farming. But I have, and growing organic has been something that I've always had a passion to do. We live on the farm. I've always lived on the farm. My son and daughters have grew up on the farm, and you know, when you do that, you don't want to be a part of the problem out there as far as the amount of pesticides and herbicides and water cleanliness issues and things. You want to be a solution, because we all have to eat. And that isn't going to change anytime soon. So the more sustainable that we can be as farmers, the better we are as being good stewards of the world.
So true. So Richard, if somebody wants to enjoy your 19 varieties, of course, through Earls, earlsorganic.com, but you also sell at local San Francisco Bay Area farmers markets, even though this is a national show. Where here in the Bay Area can people enjoy your fruit?
Well, in the Bay Area, they're pretty much right now going to have to go through Earls, which is a good thing, because only the top-notch produce gets packed. And yes. Earls does a great job of marketing and trying to get the fruit into the stores that want to have high-quality produce. Now, we've kind of changed our, because of the amount of the weather, especially, that you guys have that cold summer weather, and the amount of markets in the Bay Area, we've kind of switched over somewhat down to Southern California to do some farmers markets, but we don't do too many. That's not really trying to be my focus in organic. It's been trying to even though we do sell most of our fruit, it's local as far as California. It's difficult to get around and do the logistics of farmers markets throughout the state. So,
well, I can tell you, Richard, your fruit can be found at in San Francisco, Rainbow Grocery, Buy Right Grocery. If you get into Marin County, you're up at Good Nature, Natural Foods, and down south, you'll get into Sagonas and Draeger's. So, virtually, it's pretty much any store in the area, but those are the five that come to mind right now.
Great. Richard Burkert of Richard Burkert Farms, Danuba, California, where he grows 30 varieties of stone fruit, including 19 varieties of peaches, including the favorite O. Henry yellow peach on 65 certified organic acres. Thank you so much, Richard, for being part of the show today. Great to have you.
Well, thanks for having me.
Thank you.
Enjoyed it.
Thank you, Richard.
You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helga Hellberg.
I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And we'll be right back after the break.
Peel me a grape, crush me some ice, skin me a peach, save the fuzz for my pillow. Talk to me nice. Talk to me nice, you've got to wind me.
An Organic Conversation is brought to you by Spotica Skincare. Founded by Janet League Katzen, Spotica is a holistic approach to skincare that is 100% pure and natural, free of synthetic chemicals, and includes organic and wild-crafted ingredients. For more information about Spotica skincare products and the Spotica Spa, visit spotica.com. That's SPHATIKA.com.
Hi, my name is Earl Herrick.
I started Earl's Organic Produce over 20 years ago to bring the best certified organic produce to the San Francisco Bay Area. Still today, Earl's Organic Produce is sourcing only organic fruits and vegetables. Our core principle is healthy relationships with growers, the environment, and the clients we serve. If you are a business interested in offering the most delicious organic produce to your customers, please visit us at earlsorganic.com. That's earlsorganic.com.
Frye Vineyards is America's first organic winery, family-owned and operated since 1980. Dedicated to the highest levels of organic and biodynamic farming, Frye never adds synthetic sulfites or other preservatives to their wines. Frye organic and biodynamic wines include delicious Cabernet Sauvignon, Zinfandel, Syrah, Chardonnay, and Sauvignon Blanc. Frye Vineyards Mendocino County award-winning wines, without added sulfites. Available at grocery stores and online at fryewine.com. That's FREYWINE.com.
Are you looking for a romantic and unusual location in the Bay Area for your wedding or upcoming anniversary? Toby's Feed Barn offers the perfect venue for your celebration. A rustic barn in the heart of beautiful West Marin, with local organic caterers ready to delight your guests amid bales of hay. Toby's Feed Barn in downtown Point Reyes Station. Open 7 days a week. Family owned and operated since 1942. A West Marin original. For more information, visit tobysfeedbarn.com.
Hi, I'm Peter Walsh. My wife and I founded Manika Jewelry with the intention to offer a different kind of jewelry. Beautiful, made by local Bay Area artists, and without a social or environmental compromise. Our featured designers use reclaimed precious metals and Kimberly certified gemstones. It's jewelry made with heart and soul. Come visit our store just off Union Square at 11 Maiden Lane in San Francisco, or visit our website at manikajewelry.com.
And we are back here to an organic conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And with us in the studio is Earl Herrick, owner and founder of Earl's Organic Produce, a San Francisco Bay Area produce distributor focused solely on organic produce. And more information you can find at earlsorganic.com. And Earl, you said earlier you were always committed to organic, just like Richard Burkhardt. No question there, to be part of the solution. And the challenges with non-organic are addressed, the power of education, through the Environmental Working Group, whose mission is to use the power of public information to protect public health and the environment. It's a nonprofit founded in 1993. And with us now on the phone is Amy Rosenthal, individual donor and outreach manager and the primary spokesperson for the EWG Shopper's Guide, which includes the Dirty Dozen. Amy, welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
It's great. Thanks for joining us today, for making the time. Tell us about particularly the Shopper's Guide. What inspired it and what does it feature if people are not familiar with it?
What we did with the Shopper's Guide was we took data available mostly from the USDA, from tests that they have done of conventional produce of the pesticide residues found on them, and we analyzed that data to rank 49 different types of fruits and vegetables in the order of how likely you are to be exposed to pesticides by eating them. So the Dirty Dozen list is the list of the top 12 that we have found to have the most pesticide residues and the most different types of pesticide residues on them.
And so when you looked at the pesticides used, how did you specify the toxicity?
Well, we actually just used the tests from the USDA itself. And the metrics that we used to analyze, we took the sample of all of the tests that we did that they did and used six different metrics that account for the number of different pesticides found, the number of different types of pesticides. We actually didn't take into account the specific, you know, varying toxicity of the individual types of pesticides. So it basically just tells you the produce that will expose you to the most different
the
types
amount
of pesticides.
Yes, and varieties.
Because, you know, we just know so little about how the what effects they have and what effects they have in combination of each other.
Yes,
so
the cocktail effect is mm-hmm. often not discussed.
And Amy, this is Mark Mulcahy, and so we're talking about peaches today.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been following the work of your organization for years, and I noticed that peaches always seems to be at the top of one of the things that you do not buy.
It's number two right now, right?
Right now it's number two. And so can you just give us a little, I mean, why are peaches so ranked so poorly?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, it's definitely true. Over the years, we've seen the same fruits and vegetables pop up in the Dirty Dozen list, and peaches used to be number one. This year in our most recent update got knocked to number two by celery. But, you know, it's not something that we specifically look into, but you know, you see those trends and you notice things like the thickness of the skin. Peaches, you know, have a very thin skin. It also is, you know, seems to be related to the different, you know, the amount of pesticides that are used on the crop. So, you know, there are varying factors to it. Overall, we say it's generally pretty hard to look at a piece of fruit and guess how dirty it's likely to be, but you can look at things like thickness of skin, you know, how it's grown to kind of get an idea.
And in order to cut costs, I know that non-organic farmers, which, you know, in a way makes perfect sense, combine multiple chemicals in one application. So you have the herbicide and the pesticides and the rodenticide all at the same time to save some labor while the sprayer goes through the orchard or your field. But again, those cocktail effects, the multiple toxicity combined in one application, has never been tested by any governmental agency. Is that correct?
Right, exactly. We just, you know, again, we know so little about that was our thinking in coming up with the guide was, you know, we really wanted to take that into account.
So, Amy, I know that you're starting to get some kickback from, I mean, not kickback, but I mean pushback. Sorry about that use of words there. Some pushback from some large grower groups that are saying that the work that you're doing is actually having people not want to eat fruits and vegetables. And I know that's not your intention at all. Can you talk to us a little bit about that?
Yeah, you know, we did get a little pushback earlier in the summer from a trade group representing pesticide manufacturers, you know, big agribusiness. And they claimed that our little guide was responsible for people not eating their veggies. And, you know, to us, it just seemed like a pretty direct response to the popularity of organics, you know, and our question was, you know, maybe you should be focusing on what your consumers want instead of worrying about what about our guide that's giving people information that's useful to them. But, you know, we always get pushback and, you know, it's not something, obviously we will take it seriously, but we're still going to keep putting this out there.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, whether it's true or not, at least it's recognized that your work matters, right?
Oh, certainly. So. You know, and it's, you know, since our guide has been published, fruit and vegetable consumption has not decreased noticeably among Americans. So we're pretty sure that we don't have that much effect on people.
And you go further than that. You're not just saying what is the Dirty Dozen or the Dirty 49. You also have a list of the cleanest foods on your website, as well as a guide to why you should care and how you can avoid, of course, buying organic as much as possible. How about washing and peeling of non-organic fruits and vegetables?
Sure. Well, the thing is that this data represents fruit that has been washed and peeled. It's prepared as one generally would in the home. So, you know, you can't say, oh, I'm going to buy a conventional apple and I'm going to wash it and peel it and get all the pesticides off, because, you know, as we know, the pesticides just aren't on the fruit. They're also in the fruit. You know, they're taken up by with the water and everything else that the plant absorbs. So unfortunately, obviously, you want to wash everything, but you can't really count on that as an extra step to get rid of pesticides. So
and so your how long has your guide been out? And if people are interested in kind of in looking at this, how can they get a copy of this guide?
We've been doing this since 1995, and we're now on our sixth updated version, just came out recently. And it's all available on our website, which is foodnews.org. You can download it, see the full list, get the iPhone app, which just came out. So there are lots of different ways to get the information.
Great. Amy Rosenthal, individual donor and outreach manager and the primary spokesperson for the EWG Shopper's Guide. That's the Environmental Working Group. And for more information, you can go to EWG.org. Or, Amy, tell us that website again directly for the guide.
Foodnews.org.
Foodnews.org. And yes, there's a new iPhone app that just came out where people can take that with your iPhone to the produce aisle or to your produce department in your retail store and check things right there. Thank you so much, Amy, for being part of the show today. Great to have you.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
And with us is Earl Herrick, owner and founder of Earl's Organic Produce here in San Francisco. And Earl, you brought a bunch of stone fruit. We have, of course, Richard Burkhardt, who was on the phone with us earlier, some white nectarines, and then two, three different varieties of peaches. So are nectarines the defuzzed version of a peach? What's the verdict?
Well, I think there's a couple different verdicts there. My understanding is that it is a spur of a peach that just never developed any fuzz, and it developed its own line. We're talking about ancient times. I think it's probably a Chinese origin, traveling across to Europe and brought over here by explorers back probably 1400, 1500. So that's my understanding. And I think Mark may have another point of view
well,
to share.
Every time Earl and I have been doing this for... No, always. Well, Earl and I have been doing this a long time, and there's things that produce people have known as just fact. And now as we know how to get into the genetics of plants and humans and different species of things, they're finding more and more new information out.
It becomes a fact-ish.
Yeah, fact-ish, yeah. Yeah, factoid. And and one of the things that they're thinking now is that the nectarine may actually even predate the peach.
Oh.
Yeah. And so as they learn more, we're some of Earl's and I's old adages are kind of going, okay, well, I have to change that. But it's just because we're learning more and we know more.
Exactly.
What's the fuzz about anyway? Like what?
What's the fuzz? Tell me what's happening. What's the fuzz?
No, really. What? Like, do we know why this is a very unusual skin? Right.
I think and there's a bloom that lots of different fruits put off, and that is a protective sheen that many fruits naturally have on their outer surface to form some sort of protection.
Their plumage.
Yeah, exactly.
You can rub it down to a fair degree. It doesn't become quite shiny like a nectarine, but...
Well, there are older varieties that are no longer under production because of the amount of fuzz that they had. You probably remember some, Mark. I know I do. I don't know what they're called anymore, but they were very, very fuzzy, and they're no longer available because that's not an appealing characteristic of a peach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I had this friend who... No, okay. So this is a white... This is an organic white nectarine from Burkhardt Organic. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about this.
Well,
Earl,
Richard,
this is in season now.
Yeah, now, and these are the pearl varieties, and there are lots of different names, like a candy pearl, a majestic pearl, a grand pearl, and
Earl the pearl.
And oh my there
God.
You go.
This is
and Richard
insane.
Is actually
this yeah. is an insane piece of fruit.
Richard's actually focused on the white nectarine variety in the last couple of years, and he's now come on with some production in these varieties. Mm. I think they're very sweet.
I'm not sure if the juiciness comes over the mic, but...
Yeah. You know, what's interesting about the flavor...
Well, it comes on the mic.
The interesting thing for me about this is you have all different kinds of stuff going on in the mouth. You got some intense sugars. You got characteristics of flavor. Of course, you got the texture. You got the amount of moisture it has. You got to, as you guys are doing, you got to eat it away from the body here. And that is some of the beauty of the stone fruit. Exactly.
And a key thing about white nectarines, sorry, I had to wipe my mouth there, is if you buy them, don't buy too many at a time because they bruise really easily. And they ripen. Once they start to ripen, they ripen really fast. And so you, if you want to enjoy them, buy what you can eat between shopping visits. Well, and Helga is gone for the day.
Well,
grinning ear to ear.
You know, once in a while, you just when things come together, it's just beautiful. This was the ultimate white nectarine.
I just
juicy, sweet, heavy, rich in flavor, not past its time. Just I want to eat eight of those. What is this?
This is a yellow nectarine, and again, Richard Burkhart. And this one, as I cut into it, it was a little firm, so it maybe has another day or so. But you still get a full, rich,
very fine.
Yeah, it's a wonderful piece of fruit. I prefer honestly nectarines. I like the richness of
security.
The flavor. The security of the nectarine.
Me too. I could never deal when I was younger with the fuss. So when the nectarine came to Germany, literally, it was like a revelation. I was thinking, why would anyone ever eat peach? But then you had
the perfect
peach.
Where do you see the emails we get from peach lovers about this?
What have we done? Well, you know, this is the time
of year.
The
fuzz is, yeah.
This is the wonderful time of year. The thing to do is enjoy them now. They go so quickly. By the end of August, September, the best fruit's going to be gone. And though production will still be coming out of the Oregon and Washington area, they just don't get the heat units that we have down here. They're not going to get the flavor or the sugars. They're pretty good pieces of fruit.
What do you got,
peaches, right?
The little guy?
Yeah, the little guy, that's a white peach. And I think it's called, I'm not even sure about the name anymore, but that's a white peach, and I can give you a little slice of that.
And this big guy?
That's a bright princess, and the varieties
been
are...
Been to school?
Yeah, and here, that's, have you had that yet one?
No. This is what?
Yeah, that's a white peach.
And one of the older varieties that we won't get the chance to taste today, but we want to thank Al Crescena of Frog Hollow Farms for providing us, is an old favorite of mine. It's a Suncrest peach. If you can find that, Suncrest, O'Henry, Red Top, Elegant Lady, any of those peaches, those are some of the older varieties that are definitely worth finding.
I did want to also mention that white peach is from Ted Lowen. It's not from Richard Burkhart, another Fresno grower.
And unfortunately, the time is up. That was this week's edition of An Organic Conversation. Thank you so much, Earl.
Thank you.
For coming to the studio. Earl Herrick, owner and founder of Earl's Organic Produce, our San Francisco Bay Area produce distributor focused solely on organic produce, and beloved underwriter of this show. For more information, visit earlsorganic.com. And on the phone with us, Richard Burkhart of Richard Burkhart Farms in Dinuba, California, a grower of 30 varieties of stone fruit, including 19 varieties of peaches. And last but not least, Amy Rosenthal, individual donor and primary spokesperson, individual donor and outreach manager, and primary spokesperson for the Environmental Working Group Shopper's Guide. More information, ewg.org.
Thank you again for being part of the show today. An Organic Conversation is produced by our wonderful Heidi Hartley, production assistant, the outstanding Gina Rastani. Underwriting production is provided by The Ear, the one and only Mark Van Gelder. Thank you all. And also, always, thanks to the team here at Green 960, our very own Fab Four, Corey Cowart, Mark McNone, Chris Gardnier, Ricky Falaire. And as always, thanks to our listeners for being part of the show and for actually listening.
For our blogs, podcasts, and more information on this show and previous shows, please visit our website at anorganicconversation.com. You can also find us on iTunes, where you can download An Organic Conversation to your iPhone or iPod so you can listen to Mark whenever and wherever you want to.
You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter and other social media services, and always look for An Organic Conversation. We would love to hear from you, and so please send us your comments and questions to share@anorganicconversation.com.
Coming up right here after the hour is Your Supernatural Life with Beth Greer. Fantastic show on how to live a healthier, less toxic life. So please stay tuned. We're your hosts, Helga Hellberg.
And I'm Mark Mulcahy.
We'll be back next Saturday right here at 10 a.m. Have a great weekend. And thanks again for listening to An Organic Conversation here on Green 960.